Well, here we go with another day, another week. It's the Bomb Account Podcast. Yours truly, John Shannon.
Hello, Robert.
On hand. Hello, John. Lovely to see you. What are you drinking?
Just a good old black coffee, man. A good old black coffee. Nothing better.
Well, as I struggle with this chest cold that I have acquired.
Yeah, you've made my wife freeze about 7 jars of chicken soup because I can't bring it over anymore.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, you said last time we were together, you said, I'm sick and tired of chicken soup.
Oh, my God, yeah. I made a big batch of chili yesterday. Bobcat's famous.
Pecos Red?
Pecos Red chili.
And you've saved some for me, right?
There's a bunch in the freezer.
Beautiful.
I made a whack.
Beautiful.
I didn't save it for you. I can quite assure you. But, you know, at a nominal cost, it's available to purchase.
Well, we tried to market that as Bob and John's.
We're not marketing it as Bob and John's.
We're not?
Well, what is your contribution to this process?
Marketing and promotion.
Oh, really? Well, when you show me the plan, perhaps we'll move ahead.
By the way, you were a big hit in Hamilton yesterday.
I wasn't in Hamilton yesterday.
No, but I'm telling you, I walked around yesterday at the football game, and I would tell you that I had at least 10 people over the course of the game to say they love the podcast.
Well, how many of them do you think were lying?
Well, if you know that a podcast is going, you're listening. That's the difference between podcasts and radio. Radio is just there. You have to make an effort to listen to a podcast.
Yeah, but they may know it exists, but don't listen to it.
No. I'm telling you, there are people saying, I love the podcast with Boudreaux. I love this.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Well, so thank you very much to all the folks in Hamilton who are at the Grey Cup game.
Yeah.
You know, while I'd like to relax today and, you know, ask 2 or 3 questions and let somebody who's very verbose do all the talking, that's not going to happen because the producer failed to get a guest today.
No, this was the producer's plan.
Well, it was a bad plan.
Why? Because you're sick still?
Yeah.
No, you were better on Friday.
Well, I was worse on the weekend. Well, and I was horrible this morning. So, you know, here I am. You know, I had a lengthy hot shower. I've had several cups of hot tea to try and open up my voice and my chest.
Well, suck it up, Bob.
That's what I'm doing, John.
Okay.
We got a lot to talk about, and we'll get to it. And will you stop drinking coffee in the middle?
Why?
Well, it's distracting. Like every time I open my mouth, you pick up your coffee mug.
What?
Exactly. Lots to discuss, and we'll get to it. But first, these messages. All right, here we go. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. It's the podcast, also heard on Sirius XM channel 167. We're still on there, aren't we?
Yep. Yeah, we are. Yeah. 6 o'clock Eastern time. If you're listening to us, it's just after 6.
They haven't booted us off yet.
No. It's probably coming though.
Well, look, in no particular order, just a few weeks ago, we had Bruce Boudreaux on the show and chatted about coaching philosophies and what you do and blah, blah, blah. And he didn't have a job and he said he hadn't talked to anybody. And I believe him. And then all of a sudden, kaboom, mm-hmm. The Vancouver Canucks, who obviously were watching or listening to the show, went, hey, there's a guy. And they went and got him. And Bruce Almighty is 4-0 with the Vancouver Canucks. Now, you can make the argument that they haven't played extraordinarily well. It hasn't been a dramatic shift in the way they've played. Well, maybe in the way they've played. But defensively, they've been sound. And they've done all the things necessary. And now have won 4 in a row. And you can't get any better than that.
I'll tell you what, Bruce's arrival in Vancouver coincided with Thatcher Demko getting as hot as any goalie as I've seen in the last 5 years. This guy has been absolutely spectacular in goal for Vancouver, which takes a ton of pressure off of lots of people. But the goaltending has really, in many ways, been the one thing that is different. You know, there really are, in many ways, Bob, they're a little suspect on the blue line. They've lost two of their over the period of the four games. Travis Hamonic and Oliver Ekman-Larsson have played. And you can see Bruce's influence a little bit, I think, with the amount of long passes they use, how they try to get the puck out of their zone. So there is a little bit of Boudreau influence there, but really in the end, Bruce should be splitting his salary with the goaltender at this point because he's been that good.
Well, it raises the question, you know, if the forwards play better or the defense plays better, you attribute it to Boudreau and philosophy and theory and what he's said and how he's motivated them. Why can't you do that with the goaltender too?
I don't know. If you remember, I think Bruce told us in one of his other conversations he had with us, he just doesn't talk to goaltenders. He doesn't understand them. He lets his goalie coach do most of the work with them. Ian Clark is the goalie coach in Vancouver. He didn't get dismissed in the purge 8 or 9 days ago. So it's just one of those things that, and goaltenders just get hot. Goaltenders get in a rhythm, and they can change the whole personality of a hockey team. The other guy we should mention, Bob, is when Bruce came on board, he brought Scott Walker with him. Scott Walker was a longtime NHL player, was a owner / coach of the Guelph Storm for a while, took the Storm to the Memorial Cup tournament. He has been put behind the bench with Bruce as well, and has put a few things in to make the penalty kill a little bit better. And I think that has helped too, because their penalty kill, if there was a chance that the Canuck penalty kill could be 33rd in the National Hockey League, it was possible, because that's how bad they were. Now, there's only 32 teams in the league, so they were 32nd and have been 32nd. They're getting a little bit better with their penalty kill. And as you know, special teams make a big difference in this league.
Well, so far, so good. 4-0.
Last night was a game against a team, albeit the team has been on a long road trip.
But they've been playing well.
And the second game of a back-to-back. Carolina is one of the best teams in the game.
Yeah.
And the Canucks almost beat them at their own game with the way they were challenging everything. And finally, you're only as good as your best players. And Elias Pettersson is starting to get out of a funk that existed for well over 20 games.
Well, success does breed success. And so far,
he makes it fun, right?
A level of confidence. Oh, he does. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he'll jump on you, but I look, we know him on a personal level, not as players for a coach. But he has had the right impact on the teams that he has coached.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning. And this was a team that was completely devoid of any confidence in their ability or what's going to happen on a particular night. And he's turned that around.
Yeah. The interesting thing too, for me, is that he hasn't changed the personnel. All of the changes have occurred off the ice. Jim Rutherford, who will do his press conference later today in Vancouver, is now the president. He's going to hire a general manager. On Friday, after we recorded our show, they fired two more people within the organization, an assistant general manager and their head of analytics. So the house cleaning in Vancouver has continued, but it none of its players.
Trying to change.
Yeah, that's right. Well, in trying to change some of the culture within the Canucks hockey operations department is something that we're going to see how Jim Rutherford manages this and what goes on.
Well, and it would not be surprising if Rutherford made player personnel changes before he hired a general manager. And in fact, the suspicion, I think, would be that Rutherford will be extremely influential in that regard, that what he's probably likely to do is hire a general manager who he can mold.
Mentor. Yeah.
Yeah. Over the next couple of years. And Rutherford will be intimately, and maybe to the point of exclusively, making the decisions regarding personnel. But you're less likely to panic and make personnel changes when you won four in a row. So,
yeah,
I don't know whether you should anticipate any dramatic change.
No. The other thing is that, so the Canucks are still well below 500. The Edmonton Oilers
are going the other direction.
Are 6 games over 500. One team has won 4 in a row and the other team has lost 5 in a row. Who do you feel better about?
Well, clearly Vancouver.
Yeah. What Edmonton is going through now. And I do believe every team goes through these funks. But they, because they played well against Carolina Saturday. They played well against Boston, but unable to, once they fight their way back and claw their way back to tie the game, they can't find a way to go ahead. And that's got to wear on some of these players. Right now, we're seeing a little bit similarities of this team in Edmonton now not being able to go beyond what McDavid and Draisaitl do. The depth in the forwards has not been there in the last 10 games. And that has to be a concern for Ken Holland and Dave Tippett.
You were obviously at the Grey Cup game yesterday. I assume you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, yeah. Always have fun.
Turned out to be a decent football game. Well, exciting at the end.
Greatest football. Wasn't great. Well,
no, it wasn't great, and it wasn't until the last quarter. The offenses were, not overwhelming. You know, this game 10, 15 years ago was offensively as exciting as you can get, mm-hmm. and it has slowly and steadily waned in that regard. I don't know the exact stats, but I would say it's been a long time since the CFL had as overall as poor an offensive season, scoring season, as they had this year. And even though the score was relatively high at the end, offenses did not dominate. There were not a huge number of dramatic, exciting plays, or would you disagree?
Oh, I would tell you that I thought sitting there, I probably saw 5 plays that I would stand up and cheer for on either team.
Yeah.
There weren't very many. What was curious to me was the play calling. Sitting in the stadium, you could certainly feel the wind. The wind was a factor. And it was the most important thing that Mike O'Shea decided was, when to defer and what end to take, particularly for the fourth quarter. You needed to make your hay when you were with the wind. And both teams, when they had the wind, refused to throw the ball as much as I thought they would. Refused to use their speed long as I thought they would, which goes to your point, I think, about what we remember as the halcyon days of the Canadian Football League. What was the longest pass in the air yesterday? 22, 23 yards? Not very much.
No.
Maybe there was one Winnipeg play, but it was not a day for the classic long bomb where I think Hamilton really missed the boat on this, is that they have one of the fastest players in the game. In Banks, and did not use him long once, not once in the two quarters they had the ball and with the wind. I found that fascinating.
Well, my perception of the wind in any football game is that the real impact of wind is in the kicking game. Mm-hmm. And that certainly was evident.
Absolutely.
No yesterday, question. Especially for Hamilton, who had their kicker had a couple of punts in the fourth quarter that were miserable. Mm-hmm. kicking into the wind.
Correct.
And it set Winnipeg up with opportunities, which they eventually took advantage of to get it into overtime. But I don't know. I just thought it was, if you're like me and didn't have a horse in the race and you're just watching for entertainment value, I didn't see a whole lot of it, to be very honest with you. And most Grey Cups historically do give you enough entertainment, offensive entertainment, to keep you interested, intrigued.
Well, there were,
and they've got to find a way to do that again.
There was the spurt by the Tiger Cats at the end of the second quarter that gave them the lead at halftime, 10-7. That you said, okay, here it comes. The game is going to turn around. We're going to get an exciting second half. Then the third quarter kind of went to sleep as well before things changed in the fourth quarter. But to me, truly was is that I mean the two most impressive drives for both teams were against the wind. And I just, there are days, I've never been a football coach. I've never been a play caller, but I was sitting there saying, well, why aren't they doing more of using the ball in the air when you have the wind? And in the end, the Winnipeg defense had as much to do with the success, even though they scored more than 30 points, the Winnipeg defense blocking, batting down passes, the interception to end the game. There was a lot that Winnipeg did properly defensively to keep the Tiger Cats in check, which I believe was the difference in the game.
Been a while since we've had back-to-back Grey Cup champions, and this qualifies as that because there was not one last year. But what's the number to talk about, dominance, greatness? We always address this in sport.
Yeah.
And, the New England Patriots, I don't think ever won three in a row, but won enough of them over a period of a decade or more that, their greatness has been acknowledged. You go back to the Edmonton Eskimos under Warren Moon winning, five in a row?
Yes.
I mean, that's true greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, would Winnipeg have to win if they won three, if they won again next year? Does that qualify?
I think it does. I think it does. The other thing within the CFL world, Bob, is that you have to be able to maintain your roster. You have to,
Well, that's sure.
That, yeah. But when I say about the dynasty stuff, I mean when you talk about that that Eskimo team, and they were called the Eskimos at that point, so I'm not afraid to say it. When you talk about that team, their retention of players was in the 20s and 25. The difference between 2 years ago and this year, the Bombers retained a lot of those players. Whether they're going to retain enough of those players to win a third in a row, to me would be dynastic at this point. But they were impressive yesterday. And that's not to say Hamilton wasn't, but the Bombers looked, I tell you what, the Bombers looked bigger and faster through the whole game. So it was amazing that the Tiger Cats had the lead that they did, but the Tiger Cat defense too was very, very stingy through most of the first three quarters. Yeah. And by the way, overtime. Do you like that style of overtime? I mean, those who didn't see it it's more of the college football version.
Yeah, it's a 35-yard line, and each team gets a shot.
Right, and then the other thing is that you have to go for the 2-point convert. You can't kick a convert in overtime. You have to go for the 2 points, which means that it's. If you score a touchdown and miss your 2 point, you can still easily lose the game if the other team goes down and scores and puts their 2-point convert. So the game's going to end a heck of a lot quicker.
Yeah, and I mean that's obviously why that rule is in place. Mm-hmm. I understand it. I'm not thrilled with it.
Yeah.
But I do like it better than the NFL. I like the overtime played that way rather than the National Football League.
Isn't it football's version of the shootout, though, in the end?
Not really, because it's at the you know, you're still playing, you've still got all your guys on the field and you're still making plays.
Okay.
You know, it's not, it's the shootout in hockey or in soccer is an aberration. It's a misconstrued way to try and resolve something that they fear might be unresolvable for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you don't see it in the playoffs, right? Or in hockey, at least.
Well, yeah. I mean, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, they essentially acknowledge that it's an aberration. It's not the real sport. Should they do it differently during the Grey Cup or the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
I don't know. But we also acknowledge that football is a very difficult game to play and physically exacting, and you can't play forever.
Right.
And so you want to get it over with as quickly as you possibly can. You have to get it over with as quickly as you possibly can.
Well, I'll tell you what,
honestly, I like the CFL's concept, and I've watched, as you probably have, many college games go into overtime, and some of them are goofy as hell.
Oh yeah.
Especially in U.S. college football, because it's field goal or touchdown, and they just go on and on and on.
Well, in fact, in some of the conferences, once you get through the cycle twice, then they force you to do the 2-point convert. So they admit that it needs to end quicker, but they allow you to kick the convert or the PAT, as Americans call it, more so than in the early parts of overtime. It was funny being in the stadium when the interception occurred. It was so anticlimactic. You mean the game's over? That's it? And so, because there were 26,000 people there, and absolute, well, not my 25, because there's about 1,000 Bomber fans. There are 20,000 people there in absolute utter shock that just like that, the deflected ball, and the intercept.
Oh, I don't know why. I don't know why. That's the rule. You know, the rule
is. No, it is.
But they have to score a touchdown and get a 2-point conversion in order to keep the game going.
Yeah. And they made some mistakes, particularly on a couple of drives where they took some stupid penalties. But the Tiger Cats had a chance to win it on the last play second last play of regulation. And the receiver dropped the ball inside the end zone. Dropped the ball. Should have caught it. So they had a chance to win it in when Orlando Steinauer decided to take the rouge, as Bob Irving said, I love the rouge last week. And it was one of those things where the Tiger Cats literally played for the tie if they were forced to kick a field goal, which is what they did at the end of regulation. And then overtime became overtime.
Meanwhile, in the National Football League, we are about 13 games in. I do not remember a year where there is more mediocrity in the National Football League. And what that really means is there are so many teams that have a chance to get into the postseason this late with like literally 4 games left. I've never seen anything like it. Buffalo is 7-6. Miami is 6-7. Cleveland and Cincinnati 7-6. Pittsburgh 6-6-1. Indianapolis 7-6. The Chargers are 8-5, but they're not guaranteed. Denver is 7-6, and Vegas is 6-7. And they're all in the
Vegas,
AFC.
Vegas is not getting into the playoffs.
Well, it appears not.
yesterday.
Well, they got their doors blown in, but. And they haven't played well, obviously. They got off to a pretty good start, and they've been pretty poor. And I think you're probably right that the Raiders have really no chance. But mathematically, they have a chance.
Sure.
And I know in the Browns game yesterday where they beat Baltimore, somebody from the Browns, I don't know whether it was Baker Mayfield or somebody else, said, you know, we have to win 4 of our last 5. Mm-hmm. Well, I think 4 of your last 5 is a guarantee you're going to get in. You might be able to get in with 3-2. It's just, you just from week to week, you have no idea how anybody is going to play. And that's why I'm reluctant to agree with you on the Raiders, because as poorly as they have played, I'm just not sure they can't turn it around.
Oh,
I don't know what their schedule looks like. I don't know who they play. But
too many people in front of them.
It's a weird year. Too many people in front of them. Well, you know, then you eliminate Miami too at 6-7. And you probably eliminate Pittsburgh at 6-6-1.
Well, and hey, listen.
And look what happened to the Pittsburgh Steelers on Thursday night.
Oh, I know. But to me, John Harbaugh, a week ago we were talking about this. John Harbaugh elected to go for a 2-point convert to win the game against the Steelers a week and a half ago, right? Because he said, oh, we're too depleted to play overtime. We don't have any cornerbacks left. Well, you know what? That game, losing that game might come back to haunt them. Because do you suspect that he thought, well, we're in a good spot and we can win out and win the division? They have backed themselves into a problem now at 8-5, where people can catch them now. It's one of those things where I just think that if he had a do-over, I wonder if he would elect to kick the point and go to overtime rather than take the risk. I mean, everybody was crediting him. He's got balls. You know, he's gutsy. You know, what a decision maker. Yeah, but what if it's a stupid move?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of factors here. I mean, number one, yesterday their quarterback goes down. Now, mind you, Cleveland was beating the snot out of them.
Yeah.
And Baltimore came back in the second half. I think it was 24-3 or 24-6 at the half.
Yes.
Something like that. And Baltimore did stage a late comeback and recovered an onside kick with a little less than 2 minutes left, had plenty of time to march downfield, and then got stopped on a fourth down. But
so you don't you're telling me you can't tell me who the best team in football is in the National Football League?
I'm telling you, I have no confidence that teams that are 10-3 or 11. No, there's nobody 11-2.
No.
Arizona's 10-2. Tampa Bay is 10-3. The Packers are 10-3. Who's the best of them?
I am going to stick with the heavyweight champion until he gets knocked out.
Well, then that's the Buccaneers.
Even yesterday, Bob. Even yesterday when, you know,
They almost coughed that up too.
But the Bills are supposed to be a good team. And
well, they're supposed to be a good team, but now they're in jeopardy of not making the playoffs.
Yeah.
This is a team at the beginning of the year that said, okay, this is the season we win the AFC East and we don't have to worry about the New England Patriots. Well, now they're two games back of the Patriots. They're not going to catch them. And they have the Patriots again on the schedule.
Can you imagine if it's a Tampa New England Super Bowl? Can you imagine the hype?
Wouldn't that be interesting?
If it's a Tampa New England Super Bowl? Now, the team I think is going to get to the Super Bowl, and you don't hold me to it, but I know you will. Tennessee, I love Tennessee. I just love the way they play, and Tampa Tennessee Super Bowl to me looks pretty darn good.
Well, you can say that, but that's a team that's lost four games.
Yeah, but I like the way they play the game. I like Mike Vrabel.
Well, I'll tell you
Vrabel went into New England and beat the snot out of them.
If you want to talk about momentum and history, I don't think Tennessee beats Kansas City. Remember, this is a Chiefs team that looked like, what the hell's wrong at the first four or five games, and now they're 9-4.
Patrick Mahomes was going to the.
And they're kicking the snot out of everybody they face.
Yeah. Yeah. They are.
I mean, they're back to being as good a team as there is in the National Football League. But again, they're 9-4. But I think they've won 5 or 6 in a row, something like that.
Well, Mahomes is finally playing. And by the way, their defense is spectacular. Their defense is spectacular, Bob. That is the biggest difference for Kansas City this year, as opposed to previous years where Patrick Mahomes would go on the field and could score from anywhere and throw underhand balls 30 yards to his receivers and they'd catch it. But their defense has been the difference maker for them.
So are you going to tell me that of the 3-9-4 teams in the AFC, Kansas City, Tennessee, and New England, you'd take Tennessee?
I'm taking Tennessee.
Not a chance.
Okay.
Not even a chance. Kansas City would be my number one seed. New England would be number two. Although I continue to be shocked by New England.
Oh, you shouldn't be, though.
I know we shouldn't. I mean, it's the best coach in football. And obviously they have talent. And their young quarterback has done a fantastic job. I mean, there's – and they're on a roll.
By the way, speaking of coaches, what do you think they're thinking in Jacksonville? What do you think the money they spent on this guy, you know, dragging him out of retirement? Urban Meyer is an unmitigated disaster. It's a disaster.
Well, I've used the phrase on many occasions. You can't make chicken salad out of chicken turds just by adding more mayonnaise. It doesn't work. A coach is part of the situation, but the talent there is non-existent. You've got a rookie quarterback who clearly isn't ready to lead. Is he talented? Yes. Is he going to be good? Maybe, even probably, but he's a rookie quarterback. And he's surrounded by nothing. He has no... he's surrounded by nothing. But look, I'm not here to defend
just because he's Urban a Buckeye. Meyer. Just because he's a Buckeye, don't protect him.
He's not a Buckeye. He was a Buckeye, but he was a Florida guy before that,
and a Utah guy.
Yeah, and a Ute.
You know, he's lost more games this year than he did in the 9 years
at Ohio State.
At Ohio State and Utah, yeah, he's lost more games this season.
Well,
but again, I just don't. I see him. This reminds me so much of the first time Nick Saban went to the NFL in Miami. It's a one and done.
Well, I'll tell you, if I'm the owner in Jacksonville, I'm not firing him. What I'm doing is I'm taking a look at the roster and the young players that they have and saying, is this roster good enough? Did they dramatically underperform? And, you know, I acknowledge that there is a difference in coaching at the NFL level to the college level. At the college level, we discount the impact of recruiting. Recruiting, sitting in a living room with a kid and getting him to come to a school, especially a school like Ohio State, where, you know, recruiting is about as easy as it gets. You know, other than Alabama, is there another school that would have an easier time recruiting than the Buckeyes? I don't think so. If you recruit the best talent out of high school, you probably will have a top 10 team in the NCAA. Mm-hmm. And perhaps Urban Meyer's real strength is in the pitch rather than in the details of coaching. I have to acknowledge that possibility exists.
Recruitment, he's a fish out of water.
Well, recruitment has nothing to do with the National Football League. Maybe he isn't a great X's and O's coach. Maybe he isn't the greatest motivator. But I don't think one season with a team that was going to be bad, expected to be bad, and is bad,
is
the answer. Well, are they worse than Detroit?
I think they might be.
Well,
I think they might be.
That fits the narrative of what you're trying to say, but there's no evidence to support that.
Here's the one thing I would say. I think the guys in Detroit actually like playing for their coach. I don't think the guys in Jacksonville like playing for Meyer.
And well, based on what?
The stuff you read, we're talking about receivers having heated arguments with Meyer at practice. There's a ton of stuff going around that this guy, I mean, the whole thing about not flying back with the team and getting caught at a bar. And this is the National Football League now. This is not college football where the coach is king. This is the National Football League, professional football. Come on.
Well, that's a very nice diatribe.
As Jerry Glanville used to say, right? This is the NFL. And if you don't win, it stands for not for long.
Yeah, well, there's some truth to that. But I'll tell you what, if there is an issue, and you don't know and I don't know, if there is a real significant issue between the coach and the players in Jacksonville, if that's true, then the owner's responsibility, maybe the general manager's responsibility, is to uncover what that problem is. And if it falls on Urban Meyer, given his record, given the bar such thing, then yes, he deserves to be fired.
Absolutely.
But you don't know that that's true, and I don't know that that's true. And until we find that out, or until the ownership finds that out in Jacksonville, I'm giving him a second chance.
You are sounding very mature about this.
Thank you so much.
I mean, what has happened to you over the weekend?
I was lying in bed all weekend.
Okay.
Thinking of
Urban
this
Meyer.
Very conversation.
Urban Meyer. Well, you're wearing Buckeye colors, you know, so.
Excuse me. We got to take a break. We'll be back after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you. With every passing day, of course, we get closer to the Olympics. And one of the issues at hand is whether the National Hockey League will send their representatives to this competition. Before we get into the specifics of that, if the NHL players decide not to go, they have until January, what, 12th?
10th. January 10th. They can decide after the 10th, but then there are fines and penalties to be paid to the IIHF and the IOC.
If they decide not to go, who goes?
Well, look, for instance, Hockey Canada has hired Claude Julien as the insurance coach. I put it that way. He is coaching at the Spengler Cup and another tournament in Europe. And I'm sure he's now been instructed to just start planning to use European pros and perhaps, overage juniors or quality American League players if they're allowed to go to the tournament. So they're, and the same USA Hockey's doing the same thing. And all the federations are, I think, planning on that at some level. Now, the Russians are thrilled because they'll just take players from the KHL and life goes on.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. The Olympics always were perceived as best, the best on best in every sport. Mm-hmm. That's no longer the case. And it's certainly not the case in hockey. And if there was an Olympic hockey tournament and Canada had a representative, mm-hmm. would I definitively watch less than if it was NHL players? The answer is no.
You'd still watch.
Well, I don't know how much I'd watch. I got to tell you, Olympic hockey does not thrill me nearly as much as it used to. If the National Hockey League believes that best on best is the absolute answer, we'd have World Cups every 2 years or every 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I'd be fine with that. It had come at a better time of year. It had come at a time when I've got more time to watch, when there's not a million other things going on. I understand the players' desire to play in the Olympics. I guess I would probably have that desire too. But am I going to be panicked out of my mind if they don't go? No, I'm not. I'm not. I honestly don't care if they go. I understand why they want to go. I wouldn't go, given the circumstances. I would not go. Would you?
Oh, no. There's no question I wouldn't go. Particularly now we're getting a little more definitive rules and regulations from the Chinese and from the Chinese, the governing bodies over there, that if you do catch COVID while you're there, you're going to have to quarantine for a minimum of 3 weeks, maybe up to 5 weeks. And if you miss games back here, you're not getting your salary from the NHL team. Now there is an IIHF insurance fund that will pay you your salary, but it's got a limited amount of money in it. So if there's seven or eight guys, they may deplete the $5 million fund. To me, Bob, and you, when John Tavares was on with us, you know, he said he wanted to go. He really believed in it. He thought it was important. But let's remember, the reason the players are being given the chance to go this year was they traded a trip to the Olympics for 4 years of labor peace, a 4-year extension to the collective bargaining agreement that occurred. I'm just trying to, the last 2 years have been a bit of a blur, occurred before the bubbles. Remember the bubble in Edmonton, the bubble in Toronto? It occurred before that. So what's that? 14 or 15 months ago, we didn't think COVID would be an issue. Now, we didn't think it was going to be a problem. We thought, in a year, this thing's going to disappear and go away, and we're going to be back to normal, and life is going to continue. Bob, do you know how many players in the NHL this season have been put on a COVID protocol list? Any idea?
No.
120. 120 players this season. This season with people in the seats. There's that many players. So what's 120 of 750? That to me is a little concerning when you think about what's supposed to happen. You know, the Calgary Flames have already are the third team now to have postponed games. The Islanders and Ottawa have postponed games, but now the Calgary Flames next three games, including Monday night against Chicago, and there's a game tomorrow night, and then against the Maple Leafs on Thursday, all been postponed because there are six Calgary Flames players with COVID tests positive. It's this thing is not going away, and the fact of that tells me that I think the players should reconsider before the 10th of January about going and playing in Beijing.
Well, no, they shouldn't reconsider. They should recognize what the situation is and say, we're not going to go. We want to go. We understand they want to go. Mm-hmm. But the personal risk to their health and to their economic situation is severe. Mm-hmm. It is a high risk. If one player on the Canadian team comes down, test positive for COVID while they're there. If one player on a team that they just played test positive, when you're playing games every other day and occasionally back to backs, mm-hmm. how are you going to get through this?
I don't think you are. I really don't think you are.
And if you do test positive, we are now told you face the prospect of several weeks,
yeah,
of being put in quarantine in China,
which there's no real definition of where you're in quarantine. I don't think you're at the Ritz-Carlton. I think you're in a Chinese hospital ward at some point in that.
Maybe,
yeah. So there.
I mean, are the players going to wind up? Are the players going to be in, on campus, so to speak? Or are they going to be allowed to stay at luxury hotels while they're at the Olympics?
I don't think they've been told that yet. I mean, that's one of the
other. Well, that would be another thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. I mean, when you were in Vancouver, when we talked to players and we talked to anybody that was involved, half of the magic of going to the Olympics was staying in the Village.
Of course it was.
And even back all the way to Nagano when it all started, it was, hey, the Village is so much fun. But the Village isn't going to be the Village either. We learned that in Tokyo.
Yep. It's not going to be. It's not going to be the Village, and you don't want to be there.
But then you say to players like Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon, who haven't had a chance to go and represent their country, that, you know, it's put on hold again. But it becomes, you know, like the one thing I would say is you and I have never had the mindset of a professional hockey player who yearns to play at the Olympics. We haven't.
I'm not the least bit sympathetic to that cause. These guys are doing just fine. And okay, I understand they want to go and I understand they want to play, mm-hmm. but you can't have everything in life. In 1980 and 1984, hundreds, maybe thousands of athletes who trained for nothing but the Olympic Games
right.
were not allowed to go for political reasons.
Correct. Well, yeah, the
Moscow and LA.
Right. The first, our country, United States, and basically it was a Western boycott of Moscow. And then in 84 in Los Angeles, it became a basically a Warsaw Pact, a boycott
of LA
of the Los Angeles Games, which, by the way, was good for us because we won more medals. But
well, that's great. But you understand my point, I think.
I do. I do. And I have never been really fond of going to these Olympics ever, but I'm more adamant now that I don't think they should go.
Well, really, and we're sitting here talking about COVID and the health yeah. implications. There are plenty of political reasons why you might not want to go.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to address whether that should impact your decision or not. But there's lots of reasons not to go to Beijing.
Well, our country and the American government and a few others have already announced a diplomatic boycott of the Olympic Games, which I'm not sure what it really means, but.
Well,
a silent protest. We're not going to go and wave the flag at the games. So,
well, I will say this much, that there are a significant number who believe that the players ultimately will say, we're going. There are some signs that maybe that won't happen.
I agree. I mean, I don't.
Pietrangelo has said, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping to talk to Alex on Wednesday to get that definitively from him. I tell you what, if you sat down with the commissioner and said, okay, Gary, be honest with us, you know, you don't want them to go. And he'll say, yeah, you're right. He will say, I don't want them to go. We've got it.
No, but he
promised that this would occur if yes. they gave them four years of labor peace.
And the anti-Bettman establishment will say it has nothing to do with the health of the players. It has to do with interrupting the season in the middle and the economic impact to the National Hockey League, the cost of the National Hockey League, blah, blah, blah. And there's some truth in that.
Sure.
But we know the owners would be happy if they didn't go. We know the National Hockey League would be happy if they didn't go. What I'm afraid of is that the players will take that as a point of defiance and say, oh yeah, we're going to go just to show you.
Yeah. I don't see that
the wrong decision.
I don't see that this time around. And
hope you're right.
I think they framed it properly in dealing with the Players Association and therefore the players to say, okay, it's up to you. We promised you, it's up to you. Now, may they nudge them and say at a certain point between now and January 10th, do you really think it's a good idea? Do you really want to go? What could we do? You know, are there any incentives we can create for you?
What if they offered them a World Cup in 2023?
I think they're working towards a World Cup. I don't think 2023 is realistic, but
why not? Why not say, we know you can't go to the Olympics, but how about a controlled environment in 2023 with a World Cup?
Because I don't, you said something very, very important there, Bob.
Quick.
Controlled environment. I don't think we know in a controlled environment right now.
Well, maybe
it becomes the issue.
Maybe a controlled environment is.
Let's get through COVID completely to the point where it's endemic with us. We know it's going to be there forever, but that we don't have any issues of players getting sick as bad as they are.
No.
And as many, as many.
I'm no longer sure we're ever going to see that day. Well, however, we got to go. We'll come back and wrap it up after these messages. Well, we are back. We have about 60 seconds. Do you have 60 seconds worth of nonsense?
I just finished 50 minutes of nonsense.
Well, I agree with that. Do you have another minute or not?
No, I'm done for the day. It's your turn to talk. I did more talking today.
I did my share of talking. I got news for you.
Really?
You don't get paid by the word either.
What? Hold on. You get paid?
Yeah.
Oh.
I look forward to the conversation with Mr. Pietrangelo.
Pietrangelo, okay.
Yeah,
it's Pietrangelo. Pietrangelo.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's supposed to, we're supposed to do it on Wednesday. Alex has agreed to do it. Hopefully it'll all come through.
Well, I'll be very intrigued, and I hope he's made a decision by Wednesday.
Well.
Otherwise, I'll have to read him the Riot Act.
Oh, yeah.
And convince him that he's an idiot if he decides to go. But he's not doing, I know it's what he wants. I guess there's an outside chance this would be his last opportunity, wouldn't it?
Pretty close.
Be pretty close.
Although there are people saying, God, my last Olympics would be in Italy. My Winter Games experience would be in Italy.
Well, he may not, you know, 4 years from now, he may not be of the stature at his age.
That's a good point.
To make the team.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point.
Just because he wants to go doesn't mean he will go. In any event, I will look forward to that conversation with him, and I suspect the audience should as well. We must
Bob McCowan talking to players. It's unbelievable what's happened in this podcast.
I'm not real happy about it, but I'm going to speak to the producer about it.
No, he's unavailable today.
Crack the whip. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, we'll see you tomorrow, we hope. Goodbye, everybody.